2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, pinch hitting for Dylan White for another week, is Ian Kundle. What's going on, Ian? How are you, man? Been staying busy.
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's finally baseball season, though. So the football has wrapped up. We're fully on to baseball season now. Pitchers and catchers have reported, which, of course, has led to the inevitable injury, just whatever is going on, injuries, which has not been fun to follow. But I'm sure we'll dive into that in a little bit. But, yeah, excited to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Glad to have you back, be chatting a little bit. Let's kind of jump into, you know what? We're going to talk Red Sox trade first, then we'll jump into some of the injury news. There's a whole lot of injury news. It's going to take up like 20 minutes of the show. It has been it's been an eventful 4 or 5 days just in terms of trying to avoid landmines as a fantasy manager of any sort, whether it's dynasty teams, whether it's, you know, your redraft team. If you've already done any sort of draft, there's a good chance that you probably have already kicked yourself for a player that's injured. So we'll see how that goes. But let's talk about this Red Sox trade. Comes through earlier this week. We've had some questions about, you know, who's playing third base, who's playing second base for the Red Sox. But they go out, they make a trade, I would say with some spare parts, more or less. And acquire Caleb Durbin, as well as a couple of other players, but I would describe Anthony Siegler, and Andrew Monastero as, system depth.
Back end. Monastero's a little better than that.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's an up-down guy. I mean,
he's your 26th guy. Like, he's the last guy on your bench. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a 26-man type of guy, up-down type of player. Not somebody you want starting games for any long stretch of time. I know the Brewers had to start him a few years back and he hit okay. And they got the comp pick back, which obviously they lose with the Ranger Suarez signing. Sending back to the Brewers, they send Kyle Harrison. They send old friend David Hamilton, former Brewer, and Shane Drohan. So they add a couple of pitchers that are on the 40-man roster, couple of lefties that could potentially help them. You know, I don't want to write off the return here to the Brewers, just simply because we have seen time and time again that they can acquire pitchers and really get the most out of them. We certainly weren't, pounding the table upset that Quinn Priester got dealt. Now, a year later, Quinn Priester is coming off a really good rookie season. So before we jump into Durbin, do you see any steps forward potentially for Harrison, or for Drohan? How do you think that all shakes out? Because they are guys that more than likely will see some big league time with the Brewers this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Harrison's actually a big winner in this trade for fantasy, because he went from a spot where with the Red Sox, he was probably eighth, ninth on the starting pitcher depth chart. To look at the Brewers rotation, there were some question marks at the back end of that, especially with Brandon Woodruff's health still kind of up in the air. I think there's a clear pathway to him having a chance to make, 15, 20 starts at something like that on that team this year. As you talked to Priester, we've seen them elevate pitchers time and time again. So Harrison's someone, he's got the skills. There's a reason so many the Brewers are now the third team to take a chance on him. And if they can, tap into his raw talent, because it is there. Like, there's a lot to work with. He's got some really good traits that teams like, low release height, especially. I'm working on something on that right now, but he's one of the lowest release height pitchers who's been on a top 100 list over the last few years. And other traits that I think the Brewers can try to maximize there and turn him into a valuable pitcher. So yeah, I think there's definitely value here. Drohan, I think, is a little more of a relief type. I'm not sure he's as fantasy relevant. I think that, though, he could be a pretty good reliever. Like, is a guy with multiple pitches that can miss bats. Fast really improved last year when the velocity ticked up as he returned from injury. And if he can carry that over to 2026, I think he's someone who could make an impact out of the Brewers' pen at some point this season.
Yeah, I think that's it's kind of interesting how this trade could change the surface and some playing time battles for the Brewers. Couple of arms, obviously, that could get starts, could come out of the bullpen, give them a couple of lefties. They were a little light on. Also shakes up the infield a little bit for them as well, with Durbin getting traded. And I guess the bigger discussion from a dynasty perspective is the team went out, they acquired Sproat, they acquired Jett Williams. Does this potentially open up a spot for Jett Williams in the short term in that infield? A guy that can play multiple positions, obviously has played a lot of short, played a lot of center field, has played some second base. I'd have to double check how much third base he's played, but I do think maybe they would move Ortiz to third base and play Jett at short. I'm not sure, but I do think you now look at Jett Williams and say, there's a better chance that this guy could potentially see 350 plate appearances in the big leagues this year than there was a week ago. No?
100%. I think you could make the case that him and I think on the periphery, Brack be the biggest winners of this deal for the Brewers. Williams, for your question, has never played third base in the minors. He has no experience there. So I think So if he was to open on the roster, I think it would be at shortstop because Joey Ortiz has experience at third base. He's got plenty of arm for the position. I don't think they would move Bryce Spang off second base, given how good he's developed into a player there. And, you know, unless they're willing, comfortable going with David Hamilton or opening their baseman, which I can't imagine they would be. I think there's even a pathway that Jett Williams could open the season on the roster. Cause otherwise you look at your infield depth. They have Eddie's Leonard as an NRI. And then after that, there's not a lot there at third base right now. They have some other NRIs there, like as you said, Cooper Pratt, Jett Williams, Jesus Mate, Brock Wilkin, like some big names in the prospect world, but there's no real veteran if they're comfortable with David Hamilton for that spot. So I think there's definitely a pathway to at least one of these young guys coming in and grabbing a spot with a really strong training.
Yeah. And that's my feeling on it too. And I think you sort of look at where Williams is at. His 40-man roster decision year is this upcoming year. And, I don't think that means that guys are going to break camp. But I think it also puts them in a team in a position where, like, we're going to be adding this guy into the 40-man roster in the next, 7 months anyway, at this point, 7 or 8 months. But, like, we're only going to be, making that decision. It's going to be something that's probably going to be decided in, August or September, especially with a player like that. I always think jumping that a little bit doesn't necessarily hurt the team, especially if they feel, that it provides the most competitive roster on the field in the short term. All right, let's move it over to the other side. I think the big part of the return, other than the comp pick, is Durbin. The other two pieces, not something we have to dig into deeply, but is Durbin the starting second baseman? Is Marcelo Myers staying at third base, you think? Is this sort of what the infield is going to look like for the Red Sox? And then we could talk a little bit about the fit for Durbin with the park and the lineup, et cetera.
They haven't committed either way. The Red Sox so far, Craig Breslow and Al Score have come out and talked about that they're going to try him out at second base and third base. He's going to be an everyday player. They just don't know what spot yet. And I think that makes sense to give themselves some flexibility because Durbin has so far mostly played third base in the majors, even though he played second base primarily in the minors. So you want to give him a look at second base during camp and make sure, kind of see how that fits, because I think long-term, though, that's his best spot. Meyer has a stronger arm. We saw him at third base last season with the Red Sox. He played very well there defensively. And I think with Meyer seen as the shortstop of the future for the Red Sox, they want to keep him on the left side of the infield. I think shoehorning him at second base for the next year or two doesn't make a ton of sense. Whereas with Durbin, he's someone who's under team control for, I think, 5 more years. He could be second base for if he performs well for that entire time. So, just lock him in at second, let Meyer play third, and then when it's time to move Trevor Story off short, I think is when you make that flip from Meyer to over to shortstop. So I think Durbin probably ends up as second baseman. And I think it's, you know, an interesting fit offensively. I'm curious your thoughts on it, because he does some things well, but I do wonder when he home run, like if the home runs might, even though he pulls the ball in the air ton, I'm not sure he has the power to get over the wall in Fenway that frequently. Yeah.
No, there's not. I mean, he's a better defender, I think, than maybe we thought he would be coming up, particularly at third base. I think he's a better defender at second base. He's fine there. Obviously, the contact hitting is really good. Not a guy that gets a ton of walks, but it's not like it's bad swing decisions. That's the question that I have is, I think you look at some of the underlying numbers. He doesn't really hit the ball that hard, doesn't find that many barrels despite pretty decent angles. It was a 26.9% hard hit rate last year in the majors, over 402 events. So that's very much standardized. I kind of feel like we're going to see the slugging numbers maybe tick back a little bit. There's maybe a scenario where that doesn't happen because, you know, he uses some of the gaps and crevices and stuff in Fenway Park, and is able to push up that 25 double number from last year up to like 35 or more. But I would bet the under on 11 home runs for next year.
Yeah.
I would expect it to be more like 6 to 8 but there could be, like I said, there could be 30 plus doubles. I think he could maybe make up some of the slugging percentage that way. He's not a bad hitter. And it's like these conversations I have with my neighbors, of course, living here in Massachusetts, who are Red Sox fans, and kind of talking to them about Durbin. It's like, you're probably really going to like him. He's a very good ball player, hard-nosed guy, shows up to the park and does all the little things every day. Not going to make stupid plays or give away at bats. He's not that kind of a player. But not a guy that's going to come in and drive in, 75 runs or steal 30 bases or hit 20 home runs. It's just, he doesn't have that kind of impact. So a lot of it's going to be contact hitting, getting on base, being able to run a little bit, score a fair amount of runs, and give them some versatility defensively. I don't think it's a bad move, frankly. Especially considering your options at second base before that were like Romy Gonzalez and IKF.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with that, Bob, that I wonder is how repeatable is his hit by pitch numbers? Because last year that really boosted his on base percentage. I think he led the National League in hit by pitch, or he was near the top of that. And is that something that's repeatable year after year? I don't know. So I, because you look, his walk rate last year, it was he was in the
under 6%.
Yeah, it was under 6%. But he had a 334 OBP because he boosted it with, I think it was 24 hit by pitches or something around that number.
Yeah,
you still, I don't know.
It's a skill. Can you step into him, kid? There you go. Exactly. Hard-nosed ball player. That's what I said. He'll take one for the team.
Definitely.
All right, that's enough on the Durbin trade. Let's talk a little bit about all these injuries that are going around. The latest one that broke, Ian, is pretty wild. Sebastian Walcott is out for the entire 2026 season. He's having elbow surgery due to a UCL injury. They didn't specify Tommy John. I think it's tough to say Tommy John nowadays because some of it is internal brace and it is a slightly different procedure. It's an elbow surgery, but it is slightly different. So I don't want to just say Tommy John. I haven't seen that specifically. Maybe you have. He's out for the year. One of the big selling points with Walcott is the fact that he was so young and had played at so many advanced levels. Now that he's going to miss a year, a lot of guys in that age bracket are kind of going to be caught up. So it almost makes him less attractive as a prospect. From a fantasy perspective, I was a little bit lower on Walcott. I had him outside of my top 10. I kind of didn't consider him one of those elite shortstops. I think he can hit a little. I'm questionable about how much impact really is there if he's going to be able to get to all of it. There's a ton of tools. Now you move in, you factor in him missing a year. He's probably going to move down a lot of lists. It wouldn't shock me if he's outside the top 30 on a lot of fantasy lists that get updated between now and June,
I don't think that you have an option there because he also is the type of profile where he needs reps. He needs refinement at the plate. You know, you talked about it. The biggest issue with him, the raw balls are so tantalizing, but the contact ability just isn't there yet. The last year in Double A, 28% miss rate, 20% in zone whiff, or 19% in zone whiff, like just kind of fringy, average-ish at best contact skills. And now he's a guy that he's going to set back an entire year of development. As you said, players in his age bracket, he was ahead, advanced them. They're probably going to pass him now. You know, he's going to come back. You assume he comes back next season. He's going to be 21 years old because he turns 20 in March. So if he misses the entire season, he's not going to play another game until he's 21. Yes, 21 in Double A is still very good, but it's not, you know, it's very different than being a 19-year-old in Double A, which he was this past season. So, yeah, I think it's discouraging news, obviously. And he's the type of profile of a guy that I just, you kind of don't want missing a full season. Obviously, you don't want anyone missing the full season, but with the volatility with his hit tool and kind of just the need for consistent game reps, missing out on that year of development, I think is a pretty big blow to his dynasty value.
I 100% agree. You know, I think that, like I said, the age was doing so much lifting there, and it's not like the skills were bad. The power wasn't bad, but it wasn't as loud in games as you wanted it to be. And I think that's kind of been a consistent running theme with Walcott, that he's always had a little bit more pedigree, a little bit more hype than he's actually performed. The tools are there. I mean, you watch the player, you understand why people want to go gaga on a guy like this, but missing that year, I think, is going to very much sort of change how, you know, he's viewed on a lot of lists during the season and off season. I wouldn't say that it's a buy low period yet. I'd say give it about 4 months and at your trade deadline, he's going to be a really good buy low because everyone's going to have forgotten about him and he's not going to be that far from returning. And at that point, if you're selling, you're looking toward next year anyway. So I'm just saying, I think there could be some value to, you know, maybe just keeping the watch list updated with him and going from there. All right, let's move on to the next group of injuries. This is probably the most impactful to fantasy for 2026. We have hamate injuries galore, a hamate Armageddon, so to speak. Francisco Lindor was first. Then it was Jackson Holliday. Then it was Corbin Carroll. Lindor and Carroll, you're talking top two round guys. Jackson Holliday still getting drafted pretty highly, of course. You know, these guys are starting in 12-team leagues. So this is going to impact really all formats. There's not a whole lot you can do. But I think my thing is, and I'm going to throw out my conspiracy theory here. I wonder how much the hamate injuries and the oblique injuries have been caused by bat speed training and the amount of max effort swings that guys are taking throughout the year. This could just be nonsense. This could be like old man screaming at clouds type stuff. I feel like there's been a good connection between heavy bat speed training and particularly a lot of oblique injuries. And I think we're seeing more and more hamate injuries too.
I agree. And I think even Carroll, I think, is the best example. His didn't happen on a hit by pitch or anything. It happened just on a swing where he fouled the ball off. And that's, you know, it's one thing. And I think Lindor got hit, either Lindor or Holiday, one of them happened because they got hit on the hand, which is that's freaky stuff that happens. But the Carroll situation happened on a normal swing. And that to me is just very interesting when something like that happens. But it's a pretty big downgrade, at least for the first half of the season, I think, for all of these guys, because we've seen time and time again that even when guys return from a hamate injury, it's about a, you know, 6 week, maybe 2 month return, which pushes them right up to the start of the season, or even maybe the first, you know, mid-April. But power takes time to come back after a hamate injury. You know, a lot of these guys probably aren't going to be back right until June 1st, you know, all-star break, potential power wise and I think that's the big question, is how do you handle that going forward with your drafts? Because Carroll, I think, was a surefire first round. Lindor, as you said, was probably on that first, second round line. And now if you look at those guys' projections, and if you're taking off a fair share of home runs from the first half of the season, what does that do to them? It's a big question. I think, you know, obviously a very unwelcome one for fantasy managers heading into draft season.
Yeah, I was more inclined to be a little bit less nervous about Lindor because he's a switch hitter.
Yeah.
But it would depend on which hand it was the right hand where he had the hamate injury, which is your bottom hand if you're a lefty. That's where he's taking a majority of his swings, where he does.
Carroll is right hand also.
You know, well, Carroll's not a switch hitter, though.
Oh, yeah. Fair. But yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, unless they made Angel Acuña. They made Angel Acuña a switch hitter. You know, he could be Chris Getz over here, right?
Build your own adventure with switch hitters this spring training.
Oh my God. But like Lindor, I kind of wondered if like, well, maybe there's one swing that will be a little bit easier, you know, because it's going to be more top hand type of stuff. But, you know, it's not going to be the case. So yeah, I don't know how much to downgrade him because we have seen guys come back and get to power a little bit quicker off of hamate injuries. We've seen other guys where it's taken them half a year. The one that I always recall, and I'm sure you probably remember this one too, it was one of the first like hamate injuries I really remember the term being used, et cetera, and then how it sapped the power, was David Ortiz. If right before like his final really good seasons, he had that 1 year, I want to say like maybe 2011, 2012, right? We'd have to look where he had a really bad first half and it was coming off of that hamate injury. So even some of the biggest sluggers in the game, it can sap some power, you know. But that said, all right, so I think we've talked enough about hamates. Let's move on to some more injuries here. Spencer Schwellenbach got his elbow scoped due to some bone spurs. He's obviously going to miss some time. It is not as catastrophic as it could have been. But somebody who has a very murky injury track record. I mean, this guy did have Tommy John surgery essentially at the draft, not at the draft, but around the time of the draft. And doesn't have a ton of wear and tear in his arm. I mean, he was a shortstop predominantly, pitched a little bit out of the bullpen at Nebraska, made the jump to a starter, has handled a lot of innings since coming off of that surgery. Like he's one guy that I remember looking at the inning jump and was kind of taken back by it. I'll throw this out there. He was somebody that was on a survey that I took for a scouting job with a team, and I had to pick between him and James Wood. And this is a year ago. And the reason that I ended up going with James Wood was some of the concerns about Schwellenbeck's injury history. And like, do you really want to extend this guy versus extending a young hitter, right? I think from a dynasty perspective, it's the same. This is the kind of guy, like I traded Jesus Luzardo last year. He had a great second half. Probably hurt my team. I'm still not upset that I traded Jesus Luzardo because Jesus Luzardo is a ticking time bomb. And I think Spencer Schwellenbeck falls into the same category of you are just waiting for the next injury with this guy. And while we talked about the hamate, some of the freaky stuff that can happen, Holiday, you get hit by pitch. That's not indicative of future injury. When it comes to pitchers and elbow injuries and shoulder injuries and back injuries, that is indicative of future injury, you know, because it's not freaky stuff like getting hit with a pitch or, you know, taking a wrong step or something like that. It's doing the same thing that you get paid to do over and over again. That is breaking down your body and tearing up and shredding your ligaments. So he's a guy that honestly, like I've kind of been a little bit more yellow light, kind of pump the brakes on than other folks have, particularly Dylan. Dylan loves Schwellenbeck. I think there's a lot of risk there. I mean, even if he comes back fine, I think we should have known this coming into the year. Not that the injury didn't happen, that this was always lingering. There's always something there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the raw talent is there. You know, he's when he's on the mound, he's, you know, one of the better starters in the National League. But last year, only 110 innings, missed time due to injury. He obviously has the Tommy John on his ledger. And I think you look at him and this is a guy who he's 6'1". He's not exactly the most physical player. You know, he's more like an athlete pitching on the mound than, you know, what you see with those kind of the guys that you expect to be the innings eater types that, you know, 180 plus innings since 200 inning isn't really a thing anymore of pitchers. But yeah, I think it does make you have to worry about his long-term viability and whether or not it's just, you're just waiting, you know, he might come back, you might get a good rest of the season, but then when is the next incident going to happen? When is the next injury going to happen? And it's unfortunate because he is so talented, but I think he's so risky now. And I it has to push him down pretty far on dynasty lists, because you just I just don't think you can have any confidence that he's someone who you'll be able to count on for 150 plus innings for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future.
I tend to agree. And if we're talking about injured pitchers, we got more injured pitchers to talk about. This one I don't think is a huge shock, though. Jared Jones got put onto the 60-day IL. He had internal brace surgery in May of last year. It's usually a 12-month, 13-month recovery time on that. So that doesn't change the timeline at all on Jones being back in June. So, you know, hopefully the recovery is going well. There wasn't any additional details that were provided in that report that just came out yesterday. So, yeah, I don't think that is any cause for concern, because I really didn't expect Jones to be back from brace surgery in 8 to 9 months, like ready to roll. You know, we've seen guys maybe 11 months. I think Nick Frosso came back in 11 months, but Nick Frosso also was a minor league free agent last year. So I don't know that that was a good decision for Nick Frosso.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's video of Jones. He's been throwing off the mound. I think he threw his first bullpen. So I think it just seems like it's part of the typical recovery, and just they needed the 40-man roster spot early in camp. So there's no difference if they do it now versus on opening day. Mm-hmm. And I think, if anything, it benefits fantasy managers, because if your league has IL spots and you can already place guys on it, then that creates, you know, you can now use that spot that Jones would have taken.
It's actually an advantage. There you go.
Yeah.
There's Ian on the podcast making lemonade out of lemons. all right, let's talk about the next trade. The Westberg oblique. Did you end up making the Westberg trade?
No.
So Ian texted me the other day and he was like, hey, I know about this Westberg deal and it's not injury and it's not public yet. Should I make this trade? I am a piece of crap. So I told him to. Ian has morals. And ethics, and he decided not to do so. Really more of an ethical issue, but yeah. That was kind of funny. I wanted to drop that in here. but yeah, Westberg oblique.
Not good.
I never know. Like, cause these injuries, it's like guys could be back in 4 weeks, 5 weeks and be good. There's other times where it lingers on for 3 months and you kind of lose the first half of the season in terms of production. So yeah. It's like, you know, this is about as much of a question mark recovery time injury as you get. Even the hamate injuries, I feel like you kind of know what to expect. With obliques, they're all over the place, because I'm sure the severity of the, you know, the sprain really differs from player to player and the recovery time and all that sort of thing. How does this change your perspective on Westberg for this season, at least?
I think it's a slight downgrade, but from everything, it sounds like they don't consider it serious. But at the same time, like we saw with Roman Anthony last year, oblique can take time to heal fully. You know, he injured and he missed the rest of the season and the playoffs when it wasn't seen initially that he was going to miss that much time. So it sounds like it's been something he's been dealing with for the last few weeks, and whether it's just going to be, you know, where it's hard to say where he's at now versus what's going to be where he's going to be at in a month. But the Orioles don't too, which is encouraging, but at the same time, action—you could say actions speak louder than words—and they went out and made a trade for another infielder. So, if they were concerned about like the need to go out and get Blaze Alexander, and this was before even the Jackson Holliday injury, they went out and got Alexander. That to me is a little bit of a, you know, piques my interest to maybe that they're not, maybe not concerned he's going to miss the season or any, obviously anything like that, but that he might not be ready on opening day. You know, it could be a few weeks into the season before we see Westberg from the diamond.
And he's missed some time. Like, it's funny because he kind of came into pro ball as like an Iron Man, played 112 his first professional season, second professional season, plays 138. 2023, he split between AAA and the majors. That was over 130 games. And then the last 2 years, and then this year, obviously with the injury, you know, we had 110 combined between three games in AAA and then 107 in the majors in 2024. And then last year, 11 games in AAA, which were rehab stints, and 85 games in the majors. He's going the wrong way with the games played right now, and it looks like that could maybe linger into this season a little bit. He's starting to have a games played pattern more similar to Marcelo Meyer, and that is not what you want. Going 100 games under every year is not a great way to go through a major league career. We talked about it. This is a soft tissue injury. This is different than getting hit in the hand, right? This isn't a broken bone, freaky stuff. That crap happens. This is a soft tissue injury, and it's also a soft injury we're seeing more and more. Go back to my earlier comments on bat speed training. How concerned are you about Westberg at 26 years old, heading into his prime years, no longer super young, right? He's actually going to be 27. He turns 27 on the 18th of February, excuse me. So 27, you're kind of at a point where I don't know if I trust the health enough to invest in this guy for the next 3 or 4 years, especially at the prices I've seen on the trade market in my dynasty leagues from Westberg managers. I kind of feel like this is another guy. I kind of got a red X next to his name of like, I don't know if this guy can stay healthy. And it's not just freaky, weird, wearing, bumps and bruises and, you know, the stuff that happens in baseball. It's more like, is there some tissue stuff, recovery stuff here that, you know, he's going to be under 130 games every year? Kind of feels that way.
Yeah, I mean, the track record the last few years would seemingly indicate that. But if you look like the injury history, the 2024 injury was the hit by pitch. You know, that happens, right? That's freaky. But last season, 2025, it was a hamstring strain. So that's a soft tissue injury. And then an ankle. So it's kind of a mixed history between freaky things and then more soft tissue things. But oblique is just, you just don't like that with hitter. And it's, yeah, I think 2026 is a big season for him, that if he comes back and he's fine the rest of the season, I think, you know, it'll dissuade a lot of these concerns. If this is something that lingers into the season and then another thing crops up later, then I think he definitely would be trending towards that territory of the injury concerns warranted in it or something that you have to take into account when valuing him within redraft and dynasty leagues.
It's always tricky with hitters because, you know, you can have a couple of soft tissue injuries and, like you said, you know, a hit by pitch or something that's worked in, and you don't want to hold that against a guy that's not that's not their fault necessarily. So yeah, all right, let's move on to even more pitching injuries now. Zach Wheeler missing beginning of the season, or expected to. I don't think that's a huge shock. That was an injury at the end of the year where I honestly wondered if we were ever really going to see Zach Wheeler good again. You know,
he had a rib removed. Did you read that? He had a rib removed and he kept it.
I did not hear that.
It's he said he has it in a jar at his house now.
Why do you have the rib removed?
Part of the injury. I think it was what they had to do.
Yeah, so, I wondered about the, if they had an explanation for the procedure here.
I'll be honest, but, okay. I have not. I didn't read more into it. I was too captivated by the idea of having your own rib in a jar at your house.
Your own rib in a jar.
Just looking at it.
Probably got a few UCL ligaments in there too, some shoulder stuff, bone spurs. He's just got a jar of parts. But Wheeler missing time, I don't think is a huge shock. Shane Bieber now dealing with a forearm. If folks don't recall, he came back late in the season. Like, even after the trade deadline, he wasn't like immediately back. He built up a little bit, then came back in the last month and then pitched in the playoffs. Now coming off the offseason, dealing with some elbow fatigue, forearm fatigue. That happens. I don't know. That's also a little scary, especially from a guy where you were, I think, hoping for a full healthy offseason and to see some of that velocity maybe come back. Not a ton, but a mile per hour or two would make a big difference. That team has a lot of pitching depth, so that's not a big deal. If you're banking on Bieber to handle more than 100 innings this year, I think that might be a fool's errand, especially if like we're going into the year and he's already dealing with stuff like this. That's not great. And then another one was Blake Snell, shoulder fatigue. This one seems a little bit more wishy-washy in the sense of he could be back the first week of the season. You know, I don't fully buy like not ready for opening day quotation marks. And we kind of talked about this off air. The Dodgers can kind of slow roll some of these guys because of what their pitching depth is and having to get all these guys innings throughout the year. I almost wonder if there's like pre-scheduled IL stints. I'm not saying that that would be illegal, but kind of feels like they could do some trickery right like that if they really wanted to. Among these injuries, any ones you wanted to touch on a little bit more? I don't know if we have to go into a ton of detail.
I just think the Bieber would be the most concerning to me because it's something that it has been lingering, I guess, since the end of last season. And it would explain also why he dumped his option or, you know, versus testing free agency, which I think that's everyone true. Expected him to do.
That's so, a really good point.
Yeah, I think with Bieber, that'd be these three that I'm the most concerned about. I just don't know. I mean, this is a guy who really hasn't pitched a healthy season in, what, going on three years now. And, yeah, I just – anytime I see that sort of – when they're talking about season being delayed with forearm fatigue off a guy coming off Tommy John, and it's something that lingered the entire offseason, that definitely – don't like to read that. He would be the one. I think Wheeler's is kind of just he's an older pitcher who's coming off an injury. They're going to give him time at the beginning of the year. I honestly think it might be a good buy low value for Wheeler, especially if you're a competing team or in a redraft, because when he gets back, everything we've seen from him feels like he's going to be, as long as stuff is back, which it seems like it will be, he's still going to be one of the top pitchers in baseball. So if you can get that type of value and replace him on the waiver wire for the first few weeks, I think that combination of players could give you really good value with what Wheeler's going to be going in drafts. Snell, same thing. Dodgers pitched deep into the postseason. Well, they were in the World Series, so obviously the entire season. Snell pitched a lot last year in October, really stressful innings. We have plenty of pitching depth. There's no need to rush anything. So I think they're very different cases, but yeah, Bieber's definitely the most concerning to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Here you go. We didn't even cover all the injuries. Rhys Olson out for the season, which I guess makes sense as to why Justin Verlander is on his way back to the Tigers. You know, he's going back to where it all began. I'm coming home. I don't know if he took out like a full page ad in the Detroit Free Press to say that or not, but there you go. I'm coming home. You know what? We got the top 500 prospects out. Go take a look at that. We're not going to talk about it this week. We already went 35, 40 minutes on just straight injuries. It's been a hell of a week, Ian.
For everybody's favorite subject in fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But as I was going to say, for everybody that tuned in, want to thank you for tuning in. For Ian, for Jeff, this has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.